from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll talk with actor Rob Johansson about IU's Summer Theater Festival.
I'll chat with poet Norbert Kropf about his many projects.
And I will get a preview of this summer's Indianapolis Early Music Festival. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Actor Rob Johansson is well known to Indianapolis audiences for his work at the IRT, as well as with the Shadow Ape Company. This summer, he's taking his talents a bit south to Brown County for the Indiana Festival Theater, which is the summer professional theater for the IU Department of Theater and Drama. Travis DiNicola learned more from Johansson.
Rob, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always fun to have you in our studio. How have you been?
I've been great, Travis. I'm having a wonderful year and doing a lot of very different things.
A lot of different things. You've got to be both one of the hardest working and most diverse actors in town.
That's nice of you to say. Every new project I have, I always am so thankful that there's always such a diversity in what I do. Mm-hmm. And I can't believe it. I have been doing this for, 17 years without having to knock on big wood, not mm-hmm. having to do anything else. It's really wonderful.
That's a great thing.
Yeah, really
you were in a bunch of some of the IRT shows you've been in recently in the past season.
Let's see, Julius Caesar, mm-hmm. And then A Christmas Carol.
Of course. Oh, and Diary of Anne Frank. That was
Diary of
a year
Anne
ago.
Frank. But, mm-hmm. One of my favorites, The 39 Steps.
Very funny.
That was a fun one. I still have some scars on my body from that one.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. And, you know, my favorite one I have to give a big shout out to was doing the fight choreography for Miracle Worker.
Oh, wow. And what a scene that was.
Yeah.
Especially, yeah. That was really impressive.
With two women mm-hmm. who...
Beautiful show.
I loved that show. Yeah. I thought the set was amazing. Mm-hmm. And Nora Pfeiffer and Sierra, who has played Tiny Tim,
mm-hmm.
They both did not have much in the way of fight choreography experience of stage combat.
When she goes after Annie Sullivan, it's yeah. just it is an intense scene.
It really is.
Yeah, when Helen goes yeah. after, it's just so intense.
Yeah, it was wonderful. I was yeah. so proud of them. So I love being able to I've also been directing a lot lately. So I've done a lot of nice
Excellent.
Different things. Yeah.
And this summer, you're down at IU, down in Bloomington, and they have what they are calling their Indiana Festival Theater season, which actually is kicking off right now with Damn Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Fun schedule. Damn Yankees, Taming the Shrew, You Can't Take It With You, True Story of Three Little Pigs, a very fun children's musical, and Solana. So how did you get involved with all this and doing that this summer?
Well, Jonathan Michelson, who's the chair of IU Theater, he made a decision a few years ago to close down Brown County Playhouse.
Mm-hmm. I know it disappointed a bunch of people.
It did, myself included.
Yeah.
I love Brown County. It's really a wonderful part of Indiana theater tradition. But he felt that the facility was breaking down and mm-hmm. it was not cost effective anymore. Plus, IU, I guess now it's about a decade ago, put up a beautiful new facility.
Yes.
And his thought was, why not use what we have right here in Bloomington?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest, I was in two minds about it with everybody else.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, I mean, for the faculty and students involved.
It does.
Well.
Sure. It does. So Jonathan asked me to be a part of the new festival down there, and I jumped on board with the inaugural season last year
mm-hmm.
and had a blast. And this year I was really excited to be asked back because I can see they're branching out. They're doing a musical and two wonderful comedies, and then they're adding a children's show. So I really feel like they're trying to make it a true festival.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that they are doing that they never did at Brown County is running shows in rep.
Mm-hmm.
In Brown County, you might do three shows a season in the summer, but you'd rehearse one during the day, perform one at night, and there was never a true rep going on. And now, with Taming of the Shrew and You Can't Take It With You, both are one cast,
mm-hmm.
and it's so exciting because, you know, you're playing one role one night. You're playing a very different role the next night.
Sort of like
night.
Summer Stock. I mean, sort of that idea of utilizing a great pool of talent and doing different shows with them through the course of the summer.
Yes.
And the show's overlapping, too.
Yes, and there are plenty of days that mm-hmm. at 2 o'clock you do Taming of the Shrew, and mm-hmm. then at 8 o'clock you do You Can't Take It With You. And that is so much fun, and it's also a wonderful opportunity for the students down there that get to act. Now, I want to point out something to the Indianapolis theater audience.
Yeah.
I know there were a lot of folks that used to go down to Brown County and were disappointed that it closed. I urge you to come down to Bloomington. It's also at a wonderful time of the year. It's before the Indianapolis Fringe starts up. The Phoenix is still doing shows, which is wonderful. They pretty much do things year-round. But it's a quieter time for IRT.
It is. Mm-hmm.
So it's a really good time to check out something new.
Bloomington's a little bit quieter this time of year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does the population drop by like 70%? When I went to school down there, it always took about a year. It always took about a week to get used to mm-hmm. that shift, and
yeah.
Man, it was delicious.
But it's great. Yeah, summer in a college town, there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
And a very fun time to go down there to visit and such. So.
Yeah. I know a few folks already who have booked tickets for this mm-hmm. festival, and they have their hotel booked, and if they're going to stay down there. And there's also so many nice restaurants down there now.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to give, you know, too many free plugs out, but Farm, all those places on Kirkwood, they're amazing. So
very good stuff.
Yeah.
So Damn Yankees is the first one to open in this. Great musical, very fun. Now, you're in Taming of the Shrew and in You Can't Take It With You, is that right?
That's right.
I love You Can't Take It With You. It's just such a sweet, delightful play.
Yes.
And really fun.
It's one...
classic theater.
Most people who are stage actors, I would say it's got to be on your bucket list to be in. I remember the first time I saw You Can't Take It With You, my sister was in it in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I still remember the first line that she messed up. You know, she was the straight-laced Alice, the quote-unquote normal person in the Sycamore family. And
which is not a normal family at all.
Not a normal
family. Or maybe
family
it's completely normal for its abnormalities. But anyway. Yeah.
Exactly. And I remember that play so vividly, mm-hmm. seeing it in high school. And then I saw it up at Beef and Boards maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago. And it just sticks with you. And even though it was written quite a while ago, boy, it's mm-hmm. still, it's timeless.
Yeah.
Absolutely timeless.
Great piece of fun theater. And, you know, it is a play that's often done by high schools. And so it's mm-hmm. great to have a chance to see a professional, semi-professional company do this. Now, tell me who is making up the company here?
Well, Jonathan Michelson has taken great pains to combine seasoned professional actors
mm-hmm.
with seasoned MFA students
mm-hmm.
and differently seasoned undergrad students.
Okay, so it's a total mix.
It is great. A total mix. And, you know, I doing this last year, that mix was infectious mm-hmm. in that you have these actors who have done this professionally for a long time. You have undergrads who are hoping against hope to be able to do it. And their excitement, it's almost like a professional sports team that has some wonderful new rookies that kind of infuse the team. We worked off of each other so well last season. There's also professional actors who have transferred into being full-time teachers. Adam Noble, who's the movement teacher down at IU, he acted in this last year and was brilliant. And partially because he was a full-time actor before he shifted into teaching, and he is so hungry to act. So when summertime rolls around, he's very excited. He's going to be our Petruchio in Taming of the Shrew, and he will be brilliant. And then the MFA students who are getting ready, hopefully, to launch right into a professional career when they graduate. So it's a really wonderful
mix. Sounds like a
mix.
Great mix.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, good learning environment, but also great productions.
Yeah.
So now, who are you in Taming of the Shrew?
In Taming of the Shrew, I am Gremio, who usually is played very old. And the joke there is he's trying to get Catherine's younger sister, Bianca. And I've seen productions where there's an age difference between Gremio and Bianca of about 50 years. So he could be played as a lech. I understand that Jonathan has the idea that he wants to set this in like a retirement community in Florida. So and we're just about to start rehearsal for this. So I might be completely off base, but I'm thinking that he's going to be someone, you know, who's maybe from New York, who's now come down to spend his golden years in Florida, and he sees this babe, and oh boy. Now, and I'm working on this voice right now, and we'll see. Jonathan might say, absolutely not.
Hey, I won't hold you to it, but I'm looking forward to it.
I always picture him, I think he needs an open Hawaiian shirt with perhaps a wife beater underneath, if that term is still okay, and a golf club. I think he's always going to have a golf club with him. Yeah, so it'll be fun. It'll be a good show.
That sounds great. Yeah. We mentioned the children's musical, True Story of the Three Little Pigs. Great children's book. Very, very funny. A little twisted, but it's great that's been turned into a musical. And then the last show of the season is Solana. I'm not familiar with that.
And I'm not either.
Okay.
I'm not either. Yeah, that's a new addition, and I'm not going to be in that one. The three little pigs, what I understand about that is it's going to be great fun for kids and adults.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those beautiful shows that will keep everyone entertained. And if I'm right about this, it's the trial of the big bad wolf.
Right.
Yeah. And the audience is the jury.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think that will be very, very fun. Yeah.
That sounds great. What a great, fun season. Again, the 2012 Indiana Festival Theater season. I'm here with actor Rob Johansson, actor, director, extraordinary guy. You know, it's always good to see you. And what do you got planned for the fall? Anything you can give us a heads up on?
Yeah, I'm excited about this, and this will be a little out of the listening area. The same guy who directed The 39 Steps, Peter Amster.
He was at IRT about a year ago.
He comes to IRT quite a bit. He's directed Dracula, 39 Steps, Our Town. He and I have a magic. He's done so much for my career. He is a prime reason I'm a director now. He let me kind of assistant direct The 39 Steps, which was really wonderful. Anyway, he is doing an adaptation of Moby Dick. And he asked me to come up to Chicago and audition for that, and I'm going to be
Should
doing
I call
that.
You Ishmael, or?
No, but Elijah?
Okay.
Remember, Elijah is the guy who they meet before the voyage starts, and Elijah says, are you really sure you want to get on that boat?
Yeah.
It is a 9-person, all male cast. The story is told on a bare stage, maybe some ladders for height, but the 9 men will create everything with their bodies.
Including the whale.
Well, I think my guess is the whale's going to be in the audience's imagination. But the 9 men are going to be flung around that stage by the imaginary whale. But the bummer is this show's going to be in New York. I tend to try to go out there at least once a year to act because my family's all out there.
Sure.
So I had to make a tough choice, actually. IRT is opening with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah, which is going to be terrific.
It is going to be terrific.
Well, and you're not going to be a part of that.
No,
then.
I had to make a tough choice. Yeah. But I'm hoping that Christmas Carol will come around again. IRT has A Midsummer Night's Dream. But, you know, the funny thing is, Travis, I know what I'm doing between now and November 4th. And for those of you listening...
For an actor, that's a pretty big deal.
It is pretty big. And your acting community that you support so wonderfully, because you listen to this radio station, I know that everybody listening supports... very common. A lot of people think that IRT or the Phoenix has a group of actors that they kind of have in their stable and they hire year-round. And while that's somewhat true, the real truth is we're all independent contractors. So it's always looking around what's going to happen next. But as a rule, if I know what I'm doing 6 months ahead of time, I'm in really good shape.
Rob, it's great to see you. Have a great summer down in Bloomington. It should be a lot of fun. Looking forward to getting down there to seeing those shows.
Thanks, Travis, and I really appreciate you having me on.
Travis DiNicola with actor Rob Johansson. For the complete schedule of the Indiana Festival Theater, which is the summer professional theater for the IU Department of Theater and Drama, visit indiana.edu and search for theater. indiana.edu, search for theater. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Poet Norbert Croft has been on the road, traveling blues trails, visiting juke joints, and all the while stockpiling raw material for poems. He chatted with Sharon Gamble recently about what he's learned and about several upcoming projects. One warning, there is content near the end of this interview that is not suitable for children.
So, Norbert, without saying your exact age, we're going to say that... some of your inspirations early in your career, you're going back and rediscovering or discovering in a new way, including on a recent trip, you found the most likely burial place for Robert Johnson.
Yes, and Robert Johnson and Walt Whitman 41 years ago inspired me to start writing poetry. And so I will read an elegy for Robert Johnson that I wrote while I was in the Mississippi Delta in October. I returned there in February, March, and I had a trip to Memphis, too, as part of this project. But elegy for Robert Johnson. Found your tombstone. Several sites claim you beside a Zion Country Church under a giant pecan tree, and place three pecans on the top as an offering to thank you for bringing me into the kitchen of poetry with your taut lyrics, those 40 years ago when I first heard you sing about the blues falling like hail all around you with a hellhound on your trail. Robert, every crossroads in these Delta parts got your name written on it, and every train station got a red and blue light glowing in the dark as your lover leaves you behind to sing and keen the blues for all eternity. Every house hereabouts got a broom you gonna dust in the morning before you leave to ramble to one more juke joint where poison settles in the whiskey. But in this quiet corner of a country graveyard where your spirit expands, I spend some moments listening to your bottleneck blowing through the boughs and your high, lonesome voice singing poems of pain that last for all time as a small nearby blues country station sends out the voices of your blues brothers and sisters singing your mighty words that live beneath every blues written since you've been gone. So that's elegy for Robert Johnson. I had about half an hour at his tomb there in that wonderfully quiet, reflective cemetery next to that little church, and I was about to leave, a car pulled up, and a black guy got out, short, not too tall, thin, and he walked over toward where I was standing by the grave. And he said, I said, you coming to see Robert? And he said, yeah, what you doing here? I said, well, 40 years ago, Robert and Walt Whitman inspired me to write poetry. He said, you got to come on down to my radio station down the road and talk about that. And in about 5 minutes, I was there, and I went on the station. He calls it Awesome AM, WAGB 960. You can get it on the internet, awesomeam.com. And he played a couple of tracks, blues-related, from my CD with Monica Herzig, Jazz and Poetry, and he's been playing ever since, and we keep in communication with one another.
Not that it's particularly your intention to be an ambassador for race relations or anything, and this is radio, so not everybody has seen you. You are a tall, Germanic, white guy who loves the blues. So I'm guessing from time to time you do get challenged. It's like, wait a minute, whoa.
Why are you doing
this? What do you know? What could you know about the blues? This is maybe not your
world. I think more people think about it than say it, but there surely is that thought. But, you know, the proof of my affection for the blues is in how I write about it, probably. And, you know, I mean, there can be people who will challenge that, no doubt. People challenge anything or everything. Somebody does. But I feel more and more comfortable. And going down to the Mississippi Delta twice, I've spent a total of 4 weeks there in about 5 months. And there was this other trip to Memphis, which included a visit to Brownsville, Tennessee, about an hour northeast on the road to Nashville, where the late Yank Rachel, who came to Indianapolis and played here, lived here, and my collaborator Gordon Bonham played in his band for 10 years. I mean, they're really beautiful connections. And, you know, I found in the Delta that people were so appreciative of a guy like me coming down from Indianapolis who was interested in their little towns. I was all over the Delta, way out in the country. I dare say that in towns where not many white people come around very often. There are a few living in some of those towns, but not an awful lot.
How did you plan this trip? What inspired this trip? And I know this is part of your Creative Renewal Fellowship.
Yes, it is. I have a Creative Renewal Fellowship to continue to combine poetry and music as I did as the Indiana Poet Laureate 2008-10, but with an emphasis on the blues. And I had this wonderful Mississippi Blues Trail map, which lists all the sites where anybody of any consequence in the blues world was born or died. There are museums, there are juke joints, and I got into 4 or 5 juke joints in March. That was great to see the blues as people still sometimes experience it the way it was done in the 20s and 30s
and 40s.
What's a juke
joint before you go on?
Well, originally it was a place where there was what we call a juke box, you know, and the there was one on every plantation where there were black slaves and descendants of slaves, and it was their commissary, but also it was the place where they came on Saturday nights for dances, and it was largely the blues that they played. The great Charlie Patton played at the Dockery Plantation, which I got to see. That was a real thrill for me. Robert Johnson did a lot of this, and of course he played on the streets a lot, you know, busking. What we call busking today, they would call cutting. They would have competitions to see who could attract the most people and put their hat down or whatever, or maybe their case if they had a case. But then they started having live music in these juke joints, and that's what I got to see. And we were in Bentonia, Mississippi, about 22 miles north of Jackson, when the channel came down to tape a guy named Jimmy Duck Holmes in his Blue Front Cafe, which his parents had started in the 40s. My brother and I found out about that from a friend I have who runs the Cathead Delta Blues and Blues Folk Art in Clarksdale, in an hour and a half south of Memphis. I made friends with him since I started going down to the Reverend Peyton put me in touch with him. You know him, of course. His Indianapolis connections and WFYI connections.
You know, it strikes me, Norbert, that this is kind of an overstimulating project because it doesn't take much to inspire you to write poetry. What are you doing with all the material that has to have been inspired by this?
Well, I wrote 10 poems when I was down there in October, and I kept a journal while I was there, both trips.
Smart.
I took picture after picture after picture, but I haven't had time to put the pictures up on my Facebook page yet, except for the some Memphis and some Brownsville, Texas. I got a lot of Yank Rochelle stuff up. But I have material for all kinds of poems. But I would prefer that the material deepen within me. I got a book coming out later this summer called Songs in Sepia and Black and White, 101 poems with 58 photos by Richard Fields. 26 of those are music poems in a section called Practically with the Band. That's my fantasy poem of being in there. You know, all of us music fans would like to think we could be in the band. And 15 of them are about Bob Dylan, but there's my Yank Rochelle tribute poem, Pig Belly Blues, and Woody Guthrie, Arlo Guthrie, Lead Belly, Jenny DeVoe got a song, and Greg Ziesmer and his wife Chris Luckett, who were Indianapolis singer-songwriters who moved down to Madison.
Yeah,
have a poem.
Relocated, have yeah. that big folk music yeah, festival
yeah.
going on
we
down
were
there.
Down there last Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to get overstimulated, you're right. But it's not
that's
a bad
not,
way.
That wasn't an insult, I
no,
hope you know
I,
that.
I realize
I'm
that,
just trying
yeah.
to figure out mm-hmm. how, I mean, you know, how you take all that in.
Well,
but
you know
I
what?
Like the idea of this percolation process,
yeah,
taking
yeah.
all the, keeping your journals, taking your photos, and then letting them, yeah. and ruminating a little bit.
Yes, yeah. I've learned to trust that process.
Mm.
Early on when I started to write poetry in 1971, it started to come, and it a lot of poems came, and then there was a period, I think it was after my first full year as an instructor at Long Island University, there came a period in the fall when I got back into my classes and was very busy and I wasn't writing any poems. And I thought, how can it be over already? I waited so long for this.
But, the shortest tenure of a muse
yeah,
in
that's
history.
Right. Yeah. About half a year.
Wait a minute.
Longer.
You have a longer term
yeah.
employment contract
that's
than
right.
that, Miss
but,
Muse.
But, it, you know, what I came to see before long was that was a period when there was change and development, and I needed that space. And I was very busy teaching, and I loved teaching. And whenever I was teaching for those 37 years on the university level, I didn't start until I finished my PhD in 1970 and moved to Long Island to teach. But I could never write poems when I had a stack of papers. I just couldn't do it.
Sure.
I'm too German to not get that work done before I allow myself, you know, to get
a lot
my...
of rules in your life, you're saying?
Well, yeah, yeah internal ones. Yeah, yeah. But eventually, I mean, retiring, taking early retirement in 2004 and moving here and having all of my time to write poetry is like nirvana to me.
Yeah.
You know, and then I started to work with musicians after arriving here. During those 34 years when I lived around New York, where there are so many people trying to make it as musicians, you know, and folk and blues and jazz and classical and everything else. But it's very interesting to me that it happened after I moved to Indianapolis.
Songs in Sepia and Black and White comes out this fall, but you have another book in the works.
Yeah, I have several books in the works. I also have a collection of prose poem cycles called Seven Prose Poem Cycles called American Dreams, which is accepted for publication by Mongrel Empire Press out of Oklahoma.
Love their name.
Yeah, and they specialize in books that are sort of between the genres and don't fit in the publishing
okay.
world very easily. And prose poem is in between.
Because people
yeah.
are, there are not too many people writing them.
That's right, yeah. And so that's in the works. And then there's a book I haven't really talked about publicly, but I don't mind mentioning it now because I'm getting ready to send it out next month, a book called Catholic Boy Blues, which is based on being the victim of childhood abuse by a priest 50 years ago. And I wrote 325 poems in 2007 that came with a volcanic force. And organically, it happened this way. I couldn't have planned it. There are four voices in those poems. The boy that I was then, the man that I became, a character called Mr. Blues, whose lines came out in the blues format, rhymed.
Mm.
And then, through the help of a very skilled therapist, something that I resisted at first, the voice of the priest.
Yeah.
So that's where I knew... I didn't plan it. It just came up from the depths within me, and it was a great healing kind of experience, you know. The blues are really very healing, I find. You know, there's this whole, the blues are dark, but they're also funny. And if you sing about something that pains you, there's a kind of transformation and a kind of healing that takes place. And one of the things I love about the blues is that it's primal. The language seems to be simple on the surface, and it is, but there's a lot of emotional and even spiritual depth beneath the surface. And blacks learned how to talk in a sort of coded metaphorical way. And so they could be talking about a love relationship, but it could also be the master-slave relationship, or it could be the white oppressor. And that was there for me to call on because of my love of blues and my absorption in it for 40-some years, even though I didn't write directly about it before. So here I am.
Sharon Gamble with poet Norbert Croft. Norbert's book, Songs in Sepia and Black and White, will be launched with an event at the Indiana Landmark Center on Friday, September 7th. That night, you can also see an exhibition of a selection of Richard Field's photographs included in the book and hear Norbert reciting his poems, backed by jazz pianist and composer Monica Herzig and blues guitarist Gordon Bonham.
Okay, Travis, I have one of those handy-dandy checklists here.
Do you?
But on this checklist, it lists things not to get your dad for Father's Day. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
No ties.
Okay.
No socks.
No.
No cologne.
Nope.
No barbecue tools.
Really?
No barbecue tools. Okay. I know you are okay. The proud owner of a new grill. I think the cats, your kitties, might have in part been givers of the new grill. But we have stuff that's way more unusual and cool and fun to suggest you do for your dad on our calendar.
Or do with your dad.
Or do with your dad.
On that calendar.
We call What Will We Do for Dad?
There you go. Well, I am looking forward very much to going to the opening of Indie Collects. And this is the new exhibit at the Heron School of Art.
Love that.
Finders and Seekers. And it's really kind of fun. It features the art of a lot of local collectors, including Jeremy Ephraimson, Sidney and Louis Eskenazi, Dord and Gerald Paul, Julie and David Eskenazi, Deborah Simon, Stephen Livia Russell, Zeke and Linda Friedlander. So works include Red Grooms and Yoko Ono, Frank Gehry, Calder, Miro, Keith Haring, Jasper Johns. I mean, just great, great stuff. And it's all going to be on display at Heron. And this is very cool over at Eskenazi Hall. Looking forward to that. And that exhibit actually opens Friday night, the 15th, but then it will be running through July 26th. Worth checking out.
And a lot of the collectors will be there, as I understand it, and you can ask them how they got started.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there's also some other work, the Finders Keepers part, or Finders and Seekers, photographic works by John Strauss, Tom Mueller, and Deborah Simon, as well as How Green Was My Valley, which is an installation by Jeremy Ephraimson. So some of the collectors are actually making work as well.
Excellent. Hey, maybe your dad likes wine.
Yes.
You're paying attention. I see that. Mm-hmm. The Indiana Uplands Wine Trail is getting ready for its second annual Uncork the Uplands Wine and Food Festival. Now, it's not on Father's Day weekend. You have a little bit of time. You just make a little one-off gift certificate to give to your dad to promise a trip. This is coming up on Saturday, July 21st, and it's centered on Huber's Orchard Winery and Vineyards, which is in Starlight, Indiana. Yes, there is a town called Starlight, Indiana. It's easy to get to from just about any place within our listening area. Saturday evening, the event starts at 5 o'clock. You'll enjoy special Indiana food and wine pairings, including a culinary presentation by Daniel Orr. If his name sounds familiar, you've probably been to Farm Bloomington or maybe have one of his cookbooks. There's also, of course, pairings of wine and food throughout the night. And you can find out more at uncorktheuplands.com. Uncorktheuplands.com.
sounds very fun.
Yummy.
Hey, something that you might consider doing with your dad is being a part of StoryCorps, because StoryCorps is here recording in Indianapolis through June 30th. So they are partnering to record stories, and they have set up their mobile booth, this big Airstream trailer, in the parking lot here of WFYI at 16th and Meridian. And you do have to make a reservation to do this, and you can do that by clicking on StoryCorps.org and then finding the Indianapolis location to make your reservation. But this is a great thing to do with your dad, to come here and record your story, ask your dad some questions, interview your dad about things that have been important to him, and then you get a copy, and then another copy goes off to the Library of Congress. A very cool program. Of course, we love listening to StoryCorps Friday mornings here on WFYI during Morning Edition. StoryCorps!
They often make me cry.
I know, they're very sweet. So, but you can be a part of it. So definitely something cool to consider doing with your dad.
And I know you just said this, but I want to point out the Airstream is really cool. It's so cool to pull into our parking lot and see this Airstream. I'm expecting Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz to climb out at any moment. Speaking of movies, if you got that trivia and you're not Matthew Soucy,
wow.
Yes, there are other people who've seen the long, long trailer. Maybe your dad likes classic films, and there's one coming up next Friday night, the 22nd, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Oh, my gosh, 1969. Didn't realize it was getting up in years. Still a classic, though. That's Friday night. And
just 43 years ago.
Oh, yes, I understand. Okay. Gates open at 7 o'clock to the public for picnicking. Films begin at sunset, which... remember, this time of year is about 9:30. You're invited to bring your own picnics. Non-alcoholic beverages are welcome. Bring your own blankets and lawn chairs. And if you don't want to go to all that trouble, you can buy concessions, including alcoholic beverages, through Nourish Cafe, which is the on-site restaurant for the IMA. So Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. I think there's some father-son themes in there.
Of course.
That'll work.
Of course. Or maybe if your children are a little bit younger and dad is thinking about something that you want to do with your kids, perhaps on the theme of movies, Wizard of Oz, though this is not the movie, it is actually the theatrical production, because Wizard of Oz is taking place up at Beef and Boards. It should be a ton of fun. And of course, the bizarre monkeys, the flying monkeys, and the wicked witches, and Dorothy, and tornadoes, and all of that is going on. It should be a ton of fun. So, Wizard of Oz up at Beef and Boards running now.
Travis is trying very hard not to sing We Represent the Lollipop That's Kids right. in a funny, tiny voice. But you'll be so happy that he is resisting, as am I. So, if your dad, speaking of musicals, if your dad likes especially contemporary musicals, maybe music of Bernstein or Sondheim, he might want to go to the Indianapolis Men's Chorus Concert Saturday night at 8 o'clock. That's this Saturday, the 16th, at 8 o'clock at the Basile Theater at the Indiana History Center. You'll hear, with your dad or without, works from Candide, Sweeney Todd, Company, West Side Story, and as they say, many, many more.
Much, much more.
Much, much more. So you can go online, just Google Indianapolis Men's Chorus, and June 16th at 8 o'clock this Saturday night.
Hey, last thing I want to mention is the Installation Fest, Primary Colors. Installation Nation is going on this weekend, Friday 6 to 11, Saturday 4 to 11. So you can still check that out no matter when you're listening to us on Art of the Matter. And it is taking place at the Service Center for Contemporary Culture and Community, located out on Lafayette Road and 38th Street. Very, very cool place. The Installation Nation brings together installation artists from all across the country, and they get to make really cool large-scale pieces that you can walk in and around and check out. Always tons of fun with Primary Colors puts together, worth looking at.
Your dad might be a fan of the immensely talented and really cool Kara Jean Wallers, who's performing at 6 o'clock in a free concert this Saturday night at Ellenberger Park. So you don't have to tell dad you're taking him to a free concert. That'll just be our little secret.
So happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's
and
Day.
And we will be back next week with more things on that calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
America's oldest continuous festival of early music is now taking place in its 46th year here in Indianapolis. The Indianapolis Early Music Festival opens on June 22nd and runs through July 15th. Travis DiNicola spoke with board member Margot Schuring about this year's lineup.
Margot, welcome back to Art of the Matter. It is always a pleasure to chat with you each summer.
And it's such a pleasure to chat with you as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So another great season. I can't believe 46th season for the festival. That is incredible. And it just keeps getting better and better.
It does indeed. This year's season is going to be exceptionally good.
Well, why don't you give me a brief synopsis, first of all, of what this festival is, and then we'll sort of go through a rundown of everything that's included. But this is a really unique festival because it does feature early music.
It does indeed feature early music. It started while Frank Cooper was still a professor of piano at Butler University. Mm-hmm. He had a two-pronged interest in music. He, first of all, was the founder of the Indianapolis Romantic Festival, unfortunately no longer in existence, but then he got involved with the Early Music Festival early mm-hmm. on and was our leader for many, many years, like about 40. And we wow. have had a marvelous younger man heading it up in recent years, Mark Sudek, who is the director of the Early Music Program at Peabody Conservatory in Baltimore.
Excellent. Excellent. And again, all the concerts, as they have the past few years, are taking place down at the Frank and Katrina Basile Theater, which is located, of course, part of the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana History Center down on the canal. A great place to have these concerts.
It's a wonderful place to have the concerts. We're very privileged to be there because it's a terrific facility, the theater itself, but the whole setting is just lovely for the concerts. You have the nice view of the canal and mm-hmm. activity going on the canal, although our programs do take place indoors, so we unfortunately don't have the partnership with the restaurant that other organizations have.
But it's a nice place to go out for intermission or when you're before and after the show, which is great. But
absolutely
beautiful
wonderful.
Theater. So let's talk about the rundown of what you have coming up this summer, because the show's open in just about a week or so.
That is correct. They open on Friday night, June 22nd. Mm-hmm. The first concert features a return performance by Ingrid Matthews, one of the world's leading Baroque violinists, and she will be performing Bach's violin concertos with the Seattle Baroque.
Very good.
The second concert on Sunday, the 24th, also at 7:30, features Ingrid with her former regular musical partner Byron Schenkman on mm-hmm. harpsichord. He also is a superb and superlative young performer. Between the two of them, the music both of those two nights will be absolutely lovely.
Well, that's one of the things I really like about your festival too, is I enjoy harpsichord, and it's so rare that you get an opportunity to hear it live.
Indeed, it's gotten a little rarer, unfortunately, mm-hmm. since Frank Cooper left us, but mm-hmm. Byron Schenkman is indeed a privilege to hear and worth every bit of expense you go to go to the concert, the expense of time and energy as well as money. And it certainly is something to look forward to.
Very good. And then after that, the Seattle Baroque Orchestra?
No, they're here on Friday night.
Oh, excuse me.
And Ingrid Matthews plays Baroque violin with the Seattle Baroque.
Okay, I see. Okay. Walk me through the rest of the schedule.
The rest of the schedule consists of Friday, June 29th, just one short week later, mm-hmm. we will be featuring Gut, Wind, and Wire and the Catechist.
Now, tell me that name again because it's very clever.
Gut, Wind, and Wire.
Gut, Wind, and Wire. Okay.
This is the ingredients of the instruments that are used in the programs. And this group is based at Peabody Conservatory. They are a very dynamic and entertaining to listen to and watch ensemble. They will be playing songs about love. These will be all kinds of songs about love, mother love for a child, more carnal love, all sorts of love. And we will be blessed to have with us that night Mark Sudeck performing with the ensemble, as well as Ron McFarlane, a world-class lutenist, Mindy Rosenfeld, who is a flutist of first order, and several other musicians. Joanna Blendolf is one of their regulars, and Annalisa Papano, who graduated from IU, is going to be singing with them. She's a soprano.
Okay.
On Saturday, June 30th, the very next morning at 10:30 a.m., is something very special that I want to invite all listeners to consider for their plans. This is a free concert by Gut, Wind & Wire.
Okay.
Designed to bring children in. We want you to bring your children to this particular concert.
Mm-hmm.
They will learn about the instruments. They might even learn a dance. It will be very entertaining, very fun. And it's the way to get kids bit with the early music bug very early on. We encourage you to bring your children, and we hope to have a full house.
And again, that's a free concert the morning of Saturday.
June 30th.
June 30th.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Very good.
Now, Sunday, July the 1st, is the beginning of some more unusual programming for us. We are featuring a group called East of the River, and they it is described as a strong easterly wind of the Mediterranean, the Levantera. And the Levantera is not really the hardcore Turkish music as such. It's more like the Baltic music and the music of the rest of the whole cusp around the eastern edge of the Mediterranean, not so much into Turkey, but more into the Russian aspects of that part of the world. Also, however, there will be some music featured that may have an Israeli orientation and whatever.
And my understanding is that East of the River includes Shane Shanahan, who also plays with Yo-Yo Ma's Silk Road Ensemble.
That is exactly right. He does indeed. We're very privileged to have him.
That's
this
terrific.
Ensemble is largely directed by two outstanding recorder players, Nina Stern and Daphna Moore. And they are ladies who are out of New York City, but they have pulled together a group of musicians to do this program. They have another musician, Jesse Kotansky, who will be playing oud and violin, and Yuri Sharlin, who will be playing accordion.
Okay.
This will give it sort of a klezmer feel to it, although probably older than what we associate with the klezmer music movement.
I mean, that's what I really enjoy, too, about your festival. Is not just is the music really interesting, but historically, I mean, the instruments that are used, the style of music, it's all very fascinating.
It is indeed. And I especially have a love affair with these concerts that feature a more Eastern style of music. Many years ago, I asked Frank Cooper, why don't we ever do a Russian Baroque program? Because I had a lot of Russian culture in my background, and I thought it would be interesting. And he says, well, because they didn't have a Russian Baroque. Well, that isn't entirely true, but you have to sort of beat the bushes to find groups that perform it today.
Sure.
And it's not an easy thing to do, but somehow we've managed to do it again this season, and I can't too strongly encourage people to come to this program for both medieval and early Baroque thematic ideas in the music.
Very good. Now, the last weekend that the festival will be going on is the weekend of Friday the 13th and the 15th, and some really interesting programs, I think, to close that out.
Indeed. On Friday the 13th, we will be inviting in two superb musicians from Italy, Vittorio Gielmi, who will play viola da gamba, and Luca Pianca, who will play arch lute. And the combination, largely, from what I gather, there will not be a lot of both of them playing at one time. However, just because there won't be a lot of it doesn't mean there won't be any of it. And even if there wasn't one note played by both musicians together, it would be a lovely program because I love viola da gamba music. And I think many of your listeners who are familiar with viola da gamba love it as much as we do at the Early Music Festival. And the arch lute should be an interesting addition to the program. And these musicians, as I say, are coming to us from Italy.
Very
rare. They're going
US
to be
appearance
in this country for a short tour, and we're available, so we of course, picked them right up.
That's terrific.
Agreed we would love to have them.
Sounds like a great night maybe for a good Italian meal and then go see the concert. And,
indeed, but don't eat so much pasta that you fall asleep.
No, of course not.
That's the important thing.
Now, the last show for the finale, I'm really intrigued to learn more about because it features Douglas Fairbanks' 1922 film Robin Hood.
It does
indeed.
How does
that play into all this?
Well, they're going to show the film on a screen behind the musicians, and the musicians will be providing the music that is a part of every silent film. Even when you went to the old movies and saw those silent films, there was always music playing. And
usually think of organ music for a lot of that, as opposed to, I'm not thinking of early music like this. So tell me about this group, Hesperus, who will be performing there.
Hesperus has been with us many times before, and they do not include organ, but they do include most of the other basic instruments of the Baroque and Renaissance periods. Mm-hmm. They are superb musicians, and the music is being carefully paired up with the movie so that it will be a very obvious mood enhancer.
How fun.
Yes, it will be fun, and we're very excited about this. This is the first year we've attempted anything quite like this, and we're optimistic that we will be fitting right into the groove established by both of the major orchestras here in the city with these silent movies and instrumental accompaniment.
Well, and when I've seen other productions like this, it's a great way, especially for families, to really engage, with kids who may not be quite sure if they're, ready for classical music or early music or what have you. But having the film tied to it is a great way to just make the concert that much more enjoyable for them.
It absolutely is. And I think that the Robin Hood movie is a good good selection for us because the Robin Hood story is well known even to, I think, small children of this generation. But if they don't understand it completely, their parents will and can explain it to them either while the movie goes on quietly or afterwards. And I think that it will be a very, very much a crowd pleaser for our audience.
Excellent. Margot, it sounds like another great season. Again, the 46th season for the Indianapolis Early Music Festival. Looking forward to it very much. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
Travis DiNicola with Indianapolis Early Music Board member Margot Shearing. More information about the Indianapolis Early Music Festival can be found at emindy.org, emindy.org. All performances will be presented at the Frank and Katrina Basile Theater, located at the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana History Center on the Downtown Canal.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 when I chat with director Bob Harbin about his sassy production of Cabaret.
Well, I'll get a preview of Gregory Hancock's dance version of The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
And I'll find out why the Humanities Council is feeling so competitive. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call What Do We Do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.